I don't buy every conspiracy theory out there. In fact, you might say I'm a curious skeptic. But there is just enough evidence to consider the possibility that the powers that be are manipulating us like so many pawns on a chessboard. That's why we hear the theories out on Jim Harold's Conspiracy Corner. Welcome to Conspiracy Corner. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you once again. And it is so coincidental, as I record this, we're just a day or two past from our 12th anniversary of podcasting. And one of my very first guests on the Paranormal Podcast is on the line, and I don't know why, but we haven't had him on since, but we're going to have to rectify that and have him on more often if we don't scare him away after this. But Andy Thomas is on the line. We talked back in August of 2005 about crop circles, and he's back. It's been a little while. And today we're going to talk about something different: conspiracies, the facts, the theories, and the evidence. And I saw this book from a few years ago, and I love kind of these kind of surveys of conspiracy theory, because I think sometimes people feel that, oh, this is just a bunch of hooey. And maybe sometimes it is, and maybe sometimes it isn't. Maybe there's, and Andy talks about this in his book, maybe there's a middle ground. Andy, welcome to the program, and sorry it's taken us 12 years to invite you back, a total oversight on our part.
Better late than never.
So I know this is a few years back, but this book here, Conspiracies, the Facts, the Theories, the Evidence, what was the concept of it?
I think one of the problems that we have is that there is so much out there and people talking about conspiracies and this theory and that claim and everywhere, that after a while it's very hard to know where to begin. And if you are even remotely new to it, it can feel overwhelming. So the idea with this book, Watkins Publishing put the book together. They were looking for something that would give the big picture, you know, that would give an idea of some of the classic conspiracy areas, but also pull it together in such a way that you begin to understand what it is that people believe and why they believe it. And this is the thing, there's a lot of people out there with different ideas about what caused this and what caused that, but you often don't know why. And so it was a way of encapsulating that evidence and why people do have these beliefs in a simple way that would make people understand that there is something to it. You can't just dismiss it all, which of course very often that is what happens. So really that's what the book's doing, giving you the big picture, going through a lot of areas some people will have heard of, other bits will be new to them, but you then draw the threads together and hopefully people begin to see that it's not fair just to dismiss conspiracies, because they do exist. And although conspiracy theory is not always right, sometimes it is, and therefore we need to listen to that.
And I think that it's interesting, and I know you talk about these in the books, the idea that people say, well, all this conspiracy stuff is crazy. It's out there. It makes no sense. But if you look back at history, obviously there have been some real, real conspiracies, haven't there?
Definitely. So I mean, in the book, Conspiracies, very simply titled, but I think accurately, I go back and look at historical patterns. Because one thing that you often hear is that, well, all this conspiracy nutcase stuff, it's all new, isn't it? People have only started to do this since the internet began. Well, that's completely untrue. You can go back to Roman times and you will find a lot of people coming up with conspiracy theories. And just to give the classic one, when we had the Great Fire of Rome in AD 64, Emperor Nero is often shown playing music very happily while Rome is burning, because a lot of people at the time believed he had given orders to set fire to Rome so that he could rebuild the city in the way he wanted. What he did was blame the early Christians back then. They got the blame, but a lot of writers then at the time believed he really had done it. So there's a lot of conspiracy thinking like that, even back in those ancient times. And when you go back through history and then you come forward to our times, you'll find the same patterns over and over. And you will very often find that the public do not believe what they are told, even in like the 1500s, the 1600s. It's not very different. And the difference is perhaps now that, you know, we've recognized this. People talk about the post-truth era, but the reality is there was no pre-post-truth era. We've always doubted, but now with the internet, of course, it's much more easy to talk about these things and I think this is very important, get to the evidence, because you can make a claim, but without any evidence, it means nothing. But there are certainly some areas you can definitely show there is evidence.
That case you talked about with Emperor Nero, that's interesting because that sounds like the original false flag operation. Can you explain to us what a false flag operation is, and are there really such things?
Well, I mean, the name false flag, if you think about it, it describes itself perfectly. And indeed, that is something that does go back to those times. And the origin of that phrase, which today we take to mean, you know, something which happened, but actually what really happened, it was to make you think something else was happening, okay? But where it comes from is, in the days of the Romans and the Greeks and these earlier civilizations, they had this trick where what they would do is hijack ships of the enemy, or they would dress up their own ships in the colors of the enemy, and then attack their own fleet and make it look as if the enemy had done it, thus justifying all the wars and all the sanctions against the enemy that they wanted. So this became known as the false flag maneuver because that is what it then involved. And although now it doesn't happen quite so obviously, the same way of thinking, that way of making it look as if somebody else has done something so you can then go in and take action against them, a lot of people feel this is going on today. And things like, for instance, the classic is, I'm afraid, 9/11, where a lot of people think we were all made to think it was just Bin Laden, but maybe there's somebody else in the shadows who is doing this for reasons of their own and then blaming somebody else. So these claims, it goes on and it goes on. But they go right back into deep history.
Now, let me say this. I want to ask about something you just mentioned, 9/11. For the longest time, I, on this program or any of my other programs, I wouldn't even talk about this because I've always believed myself to be a patriotic American. That doesn't mean hateful, but patriotic. I'm proud to be an American, even though, you know, I don't know if we're exactly showing our best in the last few years. But the point is that I don't think there's anything wrong with being patriotic. So when the government said, this is what it is, I said, you know what? This is what it is. And all this stuff about 9/11, it's diabolical. It's not respecting the legacy of the people who died that day. It's, you know, I was just very virulent against 9/11 conspiracy theories. However, with the passage of time, I still believe what the government said. I'm 98% convinced. But there are a few things that I've heard that have opened up that 2%. Can you talk about some of the interesting aspects of 9/11 and why there may have been more to it?
Sure. I mean, first of all, I mean, I understand it is very uncomfortable for a lot of people to consider this. I think for a number of reasons. Now, I'm standing over here in sunny England, and of course, I don't have the kind of hard connection to the nation that, of course, you will. So it's easier perhaps for me to sort of point the finger over there and look at what's going on. However, a lot of American people also do believe there was something not right about 9/11. So it's very shocking because, of course, then what you are saying is, by believing that the people that you hope are there to look after you maybe are not doing such a great job and that maybe they would harm you for an agenda of their own. And that is, I'm afraid, very often at the heart of conspiracy theories. And therefore, it does destroy your faith in authority. But, I mean, the reality of 9/11 is that there are many anomalies. Now, I cannot tell you exactly what happened because I was not there. But are there anomalies? I think you have to factually say yes. Now, often, you're going to get anomalies. I mean, that is inevitable with any sure. complex, difficult situation. And so some you could perhaps explain away. But I think with 9/11, there is a big stack of questions that just doesn't add up if the official story is completely true. And, I mean, you've got a number of areas. You've got some more sort of, you know, just straightforward stuff like the air traffic control transcripts have been changed for strange reasons to seemingly obscure, you know, when they knew when the planes were coming in and where they were going. But then you've got other stuff, and this is one of the big ones, is the physics of how the towers collapsed. I mean, a lot of people say the way the Twin Towers collapsed is not what you would expect from a natural collapse due to fire. And I know there are many, many arguments here, but if it was the damage from the planes and the fire just, you know, destroying the buildings, they really should not have come down in the manner and at which the speed in which we see them. And some people will say, well, maybe there are reasons and we just don't know them. But then you have to say, well, okay, but then let's look at building number 7, which was a couple of blocks away from the Twin Towers. And after all the carnage and the horror, later that day at about 5:20 in the afternoon, this 47-story steel frame building suddenly fell down. And yet that was never hit by an aeroplane. And it had fire. And it caught fire. And, yep, sure, there was some damage there, but a lot of people say there is simply no way that building could have fallen down unless they demolished it. Now, these are the kinds of conspiracy theories that have grown up. And then you put together the fact that we just still to this day don't really know who the hijackers were. And that is not to say that some of the people like Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, you know, who is currently incarcerated, it's not to say they weren't involved on some level, but it's the old theory of were they patsies? Were they just part of something bigger? And the central accusation, you know, I'm afraid, and I understand why it upsets you, is that somebody within American command and control perhaps helped it or even organized it. And I cannot prove that. But if you were to ask me, are there anomalies? There certainly are. And in the conspiracies book, you know, I go through these in quite some detail. And I think the problem with 9/11 is there are a lot of anomalies, not just one or two. And for me personally, I have to conclude that the official story cannot be correct. And this is something which is often an issue, because then you still don't know absolutely what happened, but you can understand why some people will believe it is more, you know, a more massive sort of fraud and indeed a false flag attack than perhaps anybody is giving credit for. So it's just worth noting that when they had the 10th anniversary of 9/11, they kind of took a number of global polls as to what people believed about it. And it was quite shocking but telling that if you sort of put all those polls together, around 50% of the world's population does not believe the official story of 9/11. And there are differences within that. Some think that it was just allowed to happen. Others think it was made to happen, you know. But it tells you that there's a discomfort somewhere down there in the collective gut, where I think we do need to have, in my view, a proper inquiry. And only that would put some of these ideas to bed, or would show that actually we do need to reevaluate what happened. It is difficult, and I do appreciate that. And when I was writing the book, you know, I tried to take that into account. It's not comfortable stuff to come to terms with, but even if there's just a half-truth there, it still needs reinvestigation. And that is why I think that's one that is not going to go away very quickly.
Now, it's interesting. The two things that stand out to me is you talked about the idea, I think you were referring to the idea that this may have been a controlled demolition because there was that pancaking of the floors, which would be similar to what you'd see in a controlled demolition. And then a second thing, now this, I don't think it's unpatriotic at all to say this. And again, you're not an American, so that's not, doesn't even come to play to you, but I think Flight 93 was shot. I think there's a decent chance that was shot down. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that is certainly very, very likely. If you look at the photographs of the impact where we're told Flight 93 came down, which is sort of in the woods in Pennsylvania, it's like a strange dark smudge. I mean, when you see footage of, like, shall we say, more normal air crashes, there's a lot of debris, you know, there's stuff everywhere, there's engines. When you look at the impact site of 93, there's very little there. And if you hear some of the eyewitnesses, a lot of people described an explosion in the sky. And I think it is more than likely that it was destroyed in the sky, and that therefore that's why there wasn't that much debris left to even hit the ground in one hit. And you could argue there might be a case for why they would shoot it down. But what is then strange is you then have to ask why, for instance, with the planes that were coming into the Pentagon and the towers, why were they not intercepted? Because the standard procedure until that day had always been to send up planes. If you thought a plane had been hijacked, you immediately sent up fighters to escort it down, or at least to see if they could work out what was going on. On 9/11, that did not happen until so late that it was too late to do anything about it. And that was an anomaly in its own right. And then when they did send the planes out, they initially sent them in the wrong direction. And this does not fit with any normal procedure. And a lot of people feel that they allowed those planes to come in. And it's just worth noting, Norman Mineta, who I think was one of your sort of transport people working right in the White House,
yep,
when they had the 9/11 commission interviews and they were trying to find out what was going on, he recounted a very strange incident that he claims he witnessed, where Dick Cheney and himself and other operatives were in the war room, basically, trying to work out where these planes were coming in. And he reported, not trying to stir a fuss, just saying what he saw, that one of the operatives was saying, "Sir, the plane is 10 miles out. Sir, the plane is 5 miles out," almost as if they knew a plane was coming in and they were monitoring it. When it got a little bit nearer, the operative then said to Dick Cheney, "Sir, do the order still stand?" And according to Norman Mineta, Cheney sort of moved his head around very quickly and said, "Yes, of course the orders still stand. Who told you any different?" And Norman Mineta certainly gives the impression that he thought they were allowing a plane to come in, and in this incident, it hit the Pentagon. So there is a belief in some that they allowed these vehicles in. And there are many arguments about whether the planes even were the real planes that were hijacked.
Right, I've heard
there that. There are so many levels of, shall we say, you know, we don't know what's going on. There are big question marks. And it is a difficult area because when you hear from people like Norman Mineta, he is not a conspiracy theorist. He's just trying to say what happened. But one of the problems also is that both, I believe, Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld, they both said that they did not know what was happening until it was too late to do anything about it. But then the testimony of people like Mineta proves, if it is true, that they were there much earlier than they said and were aware of what was going on, in which case, why did they not take more action to stop it? So these are the reasons, amongst many others, which we simply don't have the time to go into here, as to why people doubt. And you'll often find with a classic conspiracy theory, the ones that will not go away, and I mean the moon landings is another one, is that you just have too many things that don't, at least on the surface, appear to make sense. And until we have sort of answers which seem really convincing and reasonable, the theories will not go away. It's just the way it works, I'm afraid.
One question on the Mineta quote. That was referring to the plane headed towards the Pentagon, not Flight 93. Is that correct?
I believe so. I mean, of course, you know, as ever, knowing absolutely for certain is not so easy. But as far as Mineta was concerned, yes, it was the one heading into the Pentagon.
And I just want to say one last thing about Flight 93, then we'll move on to another topic. My statement that I think that it's possible it was shot down is not to limit the heroism or the bravery of the passengers who tried to intervene, not at all. But there could have been great bravery and great attempts to storm the cockpit and a shoot down. Both of those things could happen. They're not mutually exclusive, right?
That is possible. The only thing I would add here, and again, you know, if of course some of your listeners have not heard this before and find it rather shocking, I apologize, but we need to come to terms with why people believe what they do. There are claims that the phone calls from Flight 93 could never have really happened, and that they were at least faked, or that the record of them has been changed, because it is a difficulty. Flight 93, as far as we can tell, did not then have the capability of taking calls at the altitude at which it was at, which was, I think, something like 34,000 feet. Now, it's only in more recent years that we now have cell phone technology that can operate at those altitudes. Now, that wasn't the case back then. And they did have seatback phones, as they called them, in a few planes. But as far as anybody has been able to ascertain, Flight 93 did not have them. And there are some very strange calls. One of the calls, for instance, was from a gentleman on the plane to his mother. And the first thing he does on the call is give his full name, including his surname, to his mother. And it all sounds very stilted and very strange. Now, of course, you could argue whether in a very tense, difficult situation, you know, maybe he just didn't speak normally. But there are many, many anomalies, and there are experiments which have been done which have shown that certainly back in 2001, you would be very, very unlikely to get a radio or a cell phone signal above 8,000 feet. So in which case, how were the Flight 93 calls made? And that has never been fully explained. So there is one belief that actually the tales of the heroism on the plane, which of course is a wonderful thing that we want to believe in, may in itself be another myth. And also what it does is distract away from the fact that they just shot the plane out of the sky, which they very likely did, as we've already established. It's very long and it's very difficult, and I am very aware that in 10 minutes you cannot really do justice to explaining why people question it. What I would say to any listener is really do read the evidence. You know, believe what you will, of course, but understand why people believe this. And you have to take a little bit of time to read some detail and the way the buildings fell down and why, for instance, many building experts just simply do not believe that those buildings could possibly have fallen in the way they did without some extra impetus, some explosive, some device. There's a lot of arguments about what, without that also being involved. And, I mean, Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, for instance, is an organization that's began. They're not really conspiracy theorists. Well, they certainly weren't, but they just cannot accept the physics that the official story presents them with, because to them it appears to make no sense. And it would be worth looking at things like that as well.
I want to mention, this isn't the first time in history, you know, people might say, oh my gosh, you know, people accusing the American government of lying about war and matters of national security. This isn't the first time. I mean, you can go back, and I'm sure there's other cases before this, but FDR in Pearl Harbor, many people thought that FDR knew about the attack, let it happen because he wanted the United States to get in the Second World War because he thought it was crucial to eventual national security and things like saving England and so forth. Isn't that true?
It is true. And I mean, there are many parallels with 9/11 and Pearl Harbor. And indeed, it was interesting in the days after 9/11 how many times you heard that phrase, this is the new Pearl Harbor. But of course, what they didn't realize by saying that was they were also then pricking up the ears of the conspiracy world, because it does have something in common. You can argue that with Pearl Harbor, it was just allowed to happen. But there is an argument that, for instance, the American government of the time, which at the time was Roosevelt, of course, was actually, it was blockading Japanese oil. It was doing things to them that was guaranteeing that sooner or later there would be a response. And it was widely believed, even at the time, because this is not a theory that came up afterwards, even at the time, top U.S. naval brass, as it were, believed that this was a setup. I mean, Vice Admiral Libby, who was, you know, an important person in the U.S. Navy, I think I can give you the exact quote. He said something like, and I think this is right, I will go to my grave convinced that FDR, or Roosevelt, allowed Pearl Harbor to let happen. He must have known. And you'll find other quotes from people who were around in the command and control chain at that time that just thought there's no way they didn't know when and where this was coming. And certainly we do know there were intelligence reports. And with 9/11, again, it was then later admitted, Condoleezza Rice said she had not personally been briefed with this information, but it did come out that they had been told that there was a plan for an attack. And we shouldn't forget, of course, that the World Trade Center was bombed back in 1993, yeah. The truck bomb. And that in itself, I have to tell you, there's a lot of conspiracy theories about that, because a man called Emad Salem was working supposedly for the FBI, but working with a group of Middle Eastern terrorists who wanted to bring down at least one of the towers with this truck bomb, two if they could. The idea was that just before they actually let the bomb off, the authorities would come in and arrest them all. So he was, you know, working in there as a spy. He says, and I can only just repeat what he says, that instead of giving them dummy explosives for the truck bomb, for reasons beyond his comprehension, they gave them real explosives and then didn't stop the attack before it had happened. So what is going on there? And again, of course, some people say, well, this looks like another attempt to create a false flag attack. And this is a problem. You can go down and down the rabbit hole and find this repeating pattern of these kinds of things going on, these kinds of claims being made. And it is certainly something which you can go back to Pearl Harbor, or if you'd like to go right back in history, over here, of course, we've got the gunpowder plot, Guy Fawkes. Mm-hmm. In 1605, being a Catholic in this country was not a good idea. They were basically being, you know, very oppressed. So a group of Catholic conspirators led by a man called Robert Catesby, although Guy Fawkes is the one we all remember, they put barrels of gunpowder under the old Houses of Parliament, and they began to blow up King James and the whole of the Parliament. Okay, and we all know this story, and that's why in Britain we have Bonfire Night. The 5th of November, you'll have fireworks commemorating this event. Well, of course, they were stopped, and it didn't happen, and they got found out. But at the time, a lot of people thought that actually the gunpowder plotters had been deliberately encouraged to do this by the government of the day. And there was a Jesuit priest called John Girard who had known some of the gunpowder plotters, and he wrote a whole book saying, this is a setup. The government have deliberately encouraged them to do it so they can then justify more hatred against Catholics. So it's the same thing, you know, the same false flag, but with patsies as backup accusation that we have with 9/11 and many other things. So these things are not new. And one of the things I do in the book is say this is not new. This thinking, it goes back through history. And it's always when the public is not told the whole story, but equally, that doesn't mean it's not true. So we always have to keep an open mind with these things.
This is so fascinating. We're probably going to run a little bit long if Andy is okay with that.
That's fine.
Now, if we're going to talk about conspiracies, to me, the as we would say over here, the big Mac Daddy of conspiracies, the big dog in the house, is the JFK assassination conspiracy. Now, you know, there's still some people out there who believe the Warren Commission lock, stock, and barrel. I am not one of them. I'm not ready to say that President, or that time Vice President Johnson, ordered the hit or anything. Certainly, you talked about anomalies. I can't think of any case that has more anomalies than this. It's almost like you'd have to suspend common, in my view, you'd have to suspend common sense to think everything was as we were told. What are your thoughts?
Absolutely. I mean, I think what's interesting with the Kennedy conspiracy theories is I think it was the first time, certainly in the 20th century, where a lot of people all at the same time thought, hang on a minute, this doesn't entirely make sense. Because, as I've just said, this theory is for all kinds of things going back a long, long way. And, you know, this is not new. However, I do think it was immediately considered a little bit suspicious. So, as you mentioned there, the Warren Commission, which was brought in to investigate the shooting, of course, came to the famous conclusion that it was a lone gunman, Lee Harvey Oswald, of course. One thing that's worth noting, though, and I'm surprised more people don't know this, in 1979, because a lot of people thought the Warren Commission was not satisfactory. It ignored all the claims of people hearing other gunmen on the day, gunshots being heard from other places, which of course then says, well, there was more than one gunman. Therefore, this is not one madman. This is a coup d'etat, which is of course what's at the core of this. So realizing that maybe that hadn't been addressed in 1979, in fact, the American government did reinvestigate, and it was a paper called the Select Committee on Assassinations.
Right.
And in their summary of findings and recommendations, as they called it, they concluded that there probably were other gunmen. Now, that is quite an admission. But then they didn't act on that. They didn't carry out any further investigations. So although a lot of people think the Warren Commission still stands as the last word on it, as far as the American state is concerned, that is not true. Actually, they do accept there were other gunmen. So then you get into the whole realm of, well, who were those other gunmen? Now, a lot of people believe, rightly or wrongly, but that there was a CIA involvement. You mentioned Lyndon Johnson. Yeah, some people do think he was involved. But even if that's not true, certainly something very strange happened that day. I mean, the police had audio recorders, dicta belts, as they called them. And at least some of those audio recordings seemed to record at least six shots. Now, of course, we're told that Oswald fired three. That's one of the issues, because if there were only three bullets fired, as the famous Kevin Costner scene in the film JFK makes clear, one bullet had to do an awful lot of damage. And a number of ballistics experts don't believe that's possible. Some people have tried to say, just in recent years, that actually the other extra bullet, if you like, or at least one of them, accidentally came from a security guard's gun that went off nearby. But that really does not address the grassy knoll claims. And the grassy knoll is a raised area in Dealey Plaza in Dallas, where, of course, the shooting took place, where a number of people sitting near there reported hearing shots coming from over the wall. And we might have known more about what happened, but, of course, then when Oswald was shot dead by a man called Jack Ruby, we never got to hear his testimony. And Ruby himself is a very strange character.
Oh, yeah.
Because he then, it looks like he was told, if you do this, you'll be a great hero and we'll let you off and you'll have a lovely life. Actually, it clearly then became obvious he was not going to be released. And he started to make some quite threatening and interesting statements. And he actually held a press conference in the jail where he said something like, you know, the truth of what's going on is not coming out here. And, you know, the people in high positions do not want you to know the truth. And then, of course, that was heading towards him intimating that he knew more about the shooting. He, though, then died in the police cells, presumably of some disease, but of course other people, including him, he had said, I think they're trying to kill me, they're injecting me with strange things. A lot of people think they got rid of Ruby.
Yeah, I think he died of cancer.
Well, of course, that is the official
right,
word, but
right.
I'm afraid what I'm saying is, of course, but in the conspiracy world, that is not really accepted. It's just worth mentioning, there was a lady called Rose Churami. Now, she was somebody that worked at Ruby's rather sleazy nightclub. She claimed that on the eve of the shooting of Kinsey, she had overheard Oswald and Ruby together with a group of men she believed to be CIA in Ruby's nightclub discussing the shooting of the president that would take place the next day. She actually went to the police that night to warn them, and she was not believed. And, of course, then after the shooting took place, she was in a very difficult position, which might then explain why. Just a short while later, she was then found dead by the side of a road. And a lot of people think she had said too much and seen too much. So this is an interesting thing. When people start to die in strange circumstances when they're witnesses, it begins to look even more suspicious. And indeed, I believe some of the people who were at the grassy knoll, quite a lot of them died quite early of strange diseases and odd circumstances. And of course, the conspiracy view is, well, they're just gradually getting rid of them one by one so that nobody can then be a first-hand eyewitness anymore. That is something you get with a lot of areas. I mean, just very briefly to say, for instance, with 9/11, people that saw things on the day that do not fit with the official view, quite a lot of them have died very early, abnormally early if you look at the statistics, and absolutely you've got more conspiracy theories there. So with the Kennedy thing, it's very deep, it's very dark. You then have to ask, well, okay, but who gave the orders? Was it the Mafia or the Soviets or, you know, Fidel Castro? I think the general view these days in the conspiracy world is whoever exactly was involved, it was, you know, this thing about the New World Order. that there is a ruling elite which is trying to, certainly in the Western world, trying to set itself up as a form of world government. And the view seems to be that Kennedy was not playing the game. He was not doing what was expected of him and had therefore become a wild card. And there were a number of people queuing up wanting to have him removed. So this is the thing. It's very difficult 50 years plus on to know absolutely for certain what happened. But what we certainly can say is that the official story, when you look at the detail, it really doesn't add up. And that is why this is going to remain a conspiracy theory, I suspect, forever. And here in Britain, of course, we have Princess Diana. That's our version of the Kennedy conspiracy theory. And the majority of the British people believe she was murdered, no matter what the inquests say about drunk drivers and all of this. So, you know, that's our version of it. And that in itself is now becoming mythological.
Now, on Diana, just recently there's been some news. There were some tapes that came out where she had, as I understand it, these were supposed to be private tapes, very scathing things to say about Prince Charles. Am I correct? I just read something about that.
Well, you are correct, but that is not really something that we didn't know. Now, we had already seen some of Diana's letters to her butler, Paul Burrell, because he released them, and she had made the same statements to her solicitor, a man called Lord Mishcombe, where she had said, "There is a plot to kill me." And in one of the notes that she wrote to Burrell, you'll find them online, her own handwriting, she clearly says there is a plot to kill her. She says that her husband, so at that point that was still Charles, was planning an accident. And she believed it was to make the path clear, not for him to marry Camilla, or now the Duchess of Cornwall, as she's known, but actually to marry a lady called Tiggy Leg Burke, who had been nanny to William and Harry. And it was rumoured, and never proved, but it was rumoured that she had had an affair with Charles. And it was Diana's belief that Charles wanted really to marry Tiggy, but with Diana there, Camilla here, Tiggy there, it was getting very difficult, and that somebody had to be removed from the equation. And with Diana being very successful in campaigning against landmines, for instance, things like this, there were other people that probably would have been happy to get rid of her. I mean, she was going out with Dodi Al-Fayed, whose mother was Samira Khashoggi. Now, the Khashoggi family are major arms dealers, so maybe they didn't want a peacenik at the dinner table. This is the problem. Again, a bit like Kennedy, you can make lists of potential people who would want them dead.
Right.
And then you actually find there's quite a lot of people.
Yeah, there's more people who want them dead than alive. And
yeah,
people
well,
in power.
Not quite that bad, but yes, in positions of influence, yeah. And that's where, of course, it then gets very difficult to ever know for absolutely certain who would have done this. Now, some people say, well, how can you stage a car crash? What a silly way to kill her. Well, actually, even the CIA, they use this staged car crash technique in places like the Middle East to kill people and make it look like an accident. It is actually not that uncommon. So it really is not impossible. And there are many, many anomalies about the crash. The driver, who we were told was drunk, there is absolutely no evidence, no footage at all that he was drunk. The people on the night said, no, this man seemed absolutely fine. The toxicology report, so, you know, the blood analysis of the driver, it said he was so drunk that actually, if you actually believe that, he shouldn't even have been able to have got out of bed that day, let alone get behind the wheel of a car. And yet we also know the blood sample did accidentally get switched with somebody else's. Now, the people in the inquest say, well, yes, but we did other tests and it backs up that he was drunk. But then something else to factor in is that shortly before the verdict came out saying that it was his drunk driving that was to blame, his family, this is a man called Henri Paul, was the driver, his family had been told categorically in private by the people leading the inquest that he was not to blame, that he was not drunk. And then just a few days later, against everything they'd been told, the inquest suddenly said that was the case. And what a lot of people think there is that the inquest was sort of toying with the idea of being more truthful, and somebody said, you can't say this. That's going to lead to conspiracy theories. So it was easier just to say that he was a drunk driver. There are so many problems. There was a white Fiat, a car involved in the crash at some point. We know that because of the paint. the French authorities said they could never trace it. I mean, they said that all the cameras in that quarter of Paris were off that night, which a lot of people think is a bit unlikely, but okay. Mohammed El-Fayed, who was the father of Dodi, who had just died in the crash, he hired a private detective, and they tracked down a man that they believed was the owner of that white Fiat. And he did indeed own a Fiat, but he says, as you would imagine, that it wasn't him. But it's very strange that just a short while after that, he was then found dead in another car, obviously had been murdered, the car had been set light to, and this is where people say, well, why? He obviously knew something that we were not supposed to know. This is the problem. So it's like JFK. There are so, and there's more. I mean, there's much, much more we could say, and we just don't have the time. There are so many things that simply don't add up with it that to just believe the official version seems naive. And I think that's often the case with a lot of conspiracies. I mean, okay, we must believe what we will, but if the official reports simply don't address so many anomalies, and usually they don't, I'm afraid you're going to get conspiracy theories, and probably rightly so.
I do have to ask you about one last conspiracy before we go, or the general idea of you have a section about ET conspiracies. Do you think there's a chance that our leaders, world leaders, are in league with the aliens, or at least know of intelligent life that has visited the planet? What are your thoughts?
Well, what we can say is this, is that, I mean, without any question at all, there is a UFO phenomenon. Now, that doesn't explain what they are, whether these things flying around are military vehicles or extraterrestrial or something else. That is difficult to prove. Where I think the authorities come unstuck here is where it's absolutely obvious stuff is flying around, but they just won't allow it. They won't allow us to be interested. I mean, you can use, for instance, the Freedom of Information Act to get data and papers that, you know, talk about UFOs. But the problem is, when they do then release them under compulsion, all they do is then black everything out. They redact all the information you want to see under the aegis of national security. But then the next breath, they tell you, yeah, but there isn't anything real about UFOs anyway. But then in that case, why not let us read about the sightings? So that's immediately an anomaly. I mean, just personally, because I've been doing this for a long time now, been involved in these worlds for over 25 years, and you mentioned crop circles earlier, and of course a lot of people think UFOs are connected to that. Whatever your belief about that, I've met a lot of people, and I have met endless pilots, military personnel, for instance, who have seen things that they absolutely know are not conventional craft. And there's a man called Colonel Robert Salas, who...
Oh, yes, I've interviewed him, yeah.
Yeah, well, there we go. And he absolutely, I mean, he was present at the Malmstrom nuclear base, I believe, in 1967, when a vehicle of some unknown, you know, origin appeared over the base and all the nuclear missiles shut down. Well, that's not the only account of its kind. There are many like this. Now, that would strongly suggest that there is a force out there that actually has the ability to neutralize all our weapons. Now, there's a thought, isn't there? So, does that prove it's extraterrestrial? Well, no, but I do think there is enough evidence to strongly suggest that we are being visited by something that is simply not easily explainable. And this is the problem. A lot of people say, well, why don't they just be honest about it then? Why would you cover it up?
Right.
But on the other hand, if you think with a military mind, there would be a lot of advantage to gain. If there was a race out there coming here, you would want their technology before anybody else got it, because then you could use that to your advantage. The minute everybody knows that these things are coming, that information is going to get out, and they don't want that. And I think this is possibly one of the reasons that they're desperate we don't find out. Now, another view is, maybe they don't want us to find out because we'd be frightened. And there is an element of truth to that. So what is the absolute truth? My feeling is there is something which is probably not human. That, I mean, it's a big universe out there, isn't it? We look up at the stars. There must be something else out there. It would be very strange if there wasn't. So therefore, my own view on it is we cannot rule out that it could be visiting us. And certainly we know the authorities are not being straight about what they know and claims of things like Roswell, where they've it is said, retrieved extraterrestrial technology. We cannot rule all of these out. And when you talk to people like Colonel Salas, you realize, well, hang on a minute, these people have got quite a lot to lose by going on the record. Why would they make this up? And of course, some will say, well, it's a double bluff. I don't really believe that. And with you know, Robert, he seemed to me a very sincere man. And you have the whole Disclosure Project, which has interviewed many, many people who work with the authorities, with the military. And in the end, you have to say, look, there is something going on here. I believe the only official military body in the world, I believe, unless this has changed, to absolutely acknowledge there is a UFO phenomenon, at least, which they cannot explain, is the Mexican Air Force. I think they're the only ones that have categorically come out and say, we just cannot explain these things that are flying around. And Mexico has a lot of sightings, especially around Mexico City. So, yes, I think there is something going on here. But being able to prove exactly what we're dealing with and where they're coming from and why it's being covered up, this is what, of course, keeps conspiracy theorists happy for a long time. So in the book, Conspiracies, I have a whole chapter there about extraterrestrial conspiracies, because certainly we are not being told the truth. And when they ever will, if they ever will, remains to be seen. But I think it is getting harder to cover it up, and it'll be interesting to see where that goes.
Now, I want to throw out something, and I've said this countless times on the show, so listeners, get ready for my pet theory on ET contact. I want to get your thoughts on it. I'm in my late 40s. When I grew up, we had one telephone in the house, and this telephone was a black old dial telephone. That was it. When I was a little kid, no microwave, no VCR, none of this technology. In the last, walking into my house now, I can tell my Alexa to turn on some lights in the house. I can tell it to play music. I've got an iPhone, which is basically a pocket communicator and pocket computer that can communicate with anybody in the world. And I think we take that for granted, just how much power is in one of these smartphones. Now, to me, it's very interesting. Up until, let's say, the 1940s or post-war, 1945, 1946, you know, mankind had come so far. And of course, you did have the atomic bomb. But then post-war, from the 40s on, in the last several decades, and even in my lifetime, there has been an enormous explosion of technology and development, to the point of, like, it feels like I'm living in, we have a cartoon, I don't know if they had it over there as well, ran over there, the Jetsons. Sometimes I feel like I'm living in that world, or we're starting to see things where you talk to something and it talks back to you. So, or plays music or turns on your lights or whatever. So I guess my point is that it's really curious to me that mankind suddenly got so darn smart post-World War II. So my question is, was there some X factor? Was there some technology exchange, whether it was willing or whether it was reverse engineering recovered wreckage? What are your thoughts on that idea?
Well, that is certainly a belief that many people do have. If you go back again to the Roswell incident, and one of the And that's not the only alleged UFO crash of its kind. I mean, I'd say there are many others that have been reported over the years. Yes, the argument is that what they've done, as you would do if you were of the military mind, is they've retrieved that debris and maybe even whole craft. And of course, the first thing you would do is try and adapt the technology you find into modern technology. But of course, they probably would keep the best stuff for themselves. But I think it is certainly not impossible that it's what they learned from that gradually leaked out. And maybe they allowed certain things to come out that, you know, it didn't harm them keeping some of it to themselves. One argument has been the development of the microchip, for instance, has been directly encouraged or inspired by what they found in these other devices. Now, you know, a scientist would probably say that is completely ridiculous because we would have come to this anyway.
Right.
Well, maybe. But the only thing I would say there is, I mean, you know, we do have places like Area 51 in the Nevada desert, which is a real military test zone. But, you know, again and again, people have watched strange objects flying around there. There are claims from people who've claimed they work there saying they are reverse engineering technology. And again, I just don't think it can be ruled out. I mean, the Aurora project, for instance, which is this very sort of, well, we say top secret plane, but the fact that I know about it can't be that secret. You know, some people say that, which is rather like the classic black triangle UFO, has been directly inspired in stealth technology, all of this, from what they found with these craft that came from somewhere else. Let's put it like that. So, yeah, I mean, I can't say yes or no because I don't know for certain, but I absolutely would be open-minded to that. And one thing is for sure, that the technology now is out there. I suspect in terms of military technology, there is a lot that they have that they don't put on public display.
Yes.
Because, of course, then they give the game away. The danger is, though, and I think, you know, with the concern we have now about the world becoming more roboticized and artificial intelligence, is that this technology gets used against us and against the people. Certainly, if you are a ruling elite which wants more control and more surveillance, that phone in your pocket's the gift they've wanted for years.
Oh, they know it's a perfect surveillance device. Yes.
Absolutely.
Turn on the mics. We can hear everything.
Indeed. So sadly, yes, so that's the danger. There are many marvelous things, but if this did come from beyond, it is also now perhaps being used against us. And I think the way we use this technology, wherever it came from, we need to be very conscious and very careful about it, because otherwise, before you know it, it'll get the better of us.
Well, I can greatly say one of the biggest mistakes in the history of my podcasting in the last 12 years is not having Andy Thomas on more, because I could just talk for hours. But we can't do that, unfortunately. Andy, tell us, where if people want to continue this conversation with you and by checking out your website, reading your books and so forth, where can they go?
Well, my own website is truthagenda.org. truthagenda.org. If you go on there, you can find out all about me and the books that I've written and the book Conspiracies, but also some videos, quite a lot of videos there where, you know, I give whole presentations giving more detail on what we've touched on here. And if you just search YouTube in general, I'll come up. You know, I'm there, Andy Thomas, on all kinds of subjects. So do have a look. I mean, to encapsulate what we've covered here, there is a lecture I gave, which is on YouTube, and it's called A Conspiracy History of the World. And that's got a lot of views now. So look that up on YouTube. And that's quite a good starting point. If you're new to this, it gives you the quick guide. It's about, 90 minutes, but it'll give you the basics. And indeed, the books, well, Conspiracies is one, and The Truth Agenda is a book that I'm very well known for, certainly over here, which, again, that sort of brings in more of the paranormal stuff, whereas Conspiracies is a little bit more hardcore. But, you know, both of them, they're going to fill you in on stuff that I think people should know. So have a look at the website, truthagenda.org, start there. But, yeah, there's much more to know. And, I mean, I really appreciate that you've given some airtime to this, and hopefully some readers will be encouraged to find out more, because we simply can't give the detail here that explains why people do have these strong convictions. But it's worth finding out why. And then I think, you know, the more we all are aware of that, the more we're dealing with reality, not what the media tells you.
Great stuff. The book is Conspiracies, the Facts, the Theories, the Evidence. The author is Andy Thomas. Andy, thank you for your time today. And thank you for tuning in to the Conspiracy Corner. I hope that you enjoyed it. And as always, be careful when you're going around the next corner. There just may be a conspiracy. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.